Pois, bye bye.
You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Listener sponsored, Community Radio. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base. From unknown positions, live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice. So nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows quite a few things.
All the important
it's
things.
It's degrading.
Yeah. Well, it is today. So, yeah.
Mr. Smarty Pants.
I did not know this. I had a COVID shot and a flu shot yesterday.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it turns out that one of the side effects is insomnia. I never had this as a problem
that's
before.
Just... Bill Gates controlling your brain.
Oh,
so that's how
okay.
That works.
All right. Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
But I slept for like an hour last night, and yeah. You'll be amused by this. I had a nightmare about Dr. Doom.
Of course.
I mean, my subconscious is not even trying, right? I mean, it's just evil supervillain running the world. I don't know. Where did that come from? I have no idea.
So we have a guest today for a little while at least.
Yes, we do.
Helena White, our pal Helena.
Yes, thank you very, very much. I can't tell you how honored I am to be on the air on this show.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just absolutely floored
to
be invited.
Is there a reason you can't tell us? Do you have an NDA or something?
Oh, did we get one of those drawn up? We usually do that before the guests come on.
Well, I was driving in the car over here. I was trying to think, when did I start listening to you guys? And I know that Melvina was crawling around underneath the control board. And
she's 27 now.
Well, so that tells you something.
She still crawls around.
I was at college here in the 80s from 83 to 87, but you weren't on at that time.
No.
And then moved back here in 96.
Oh, okay.
So probably starting in 96, 97, 98, that's probably when I started listening to you guys.
Okay, cool. And you've done a lot of stuff at the station.
Well, yes, I have. Funnily enough, this year I was on the radio 40 years ago. I was on WRT for the first time 40 years ago this year.
Really?
Because in 1984, I did an access hour. Yeah. Here on the station. And
do you remember what it was? What kind of stuff you did?
Oh, I played a whole bunch of different stuff from Nina Hagen
to... Oh, I love Nina Hagen. Excellent.
Throbbing... He's getting all giddy over here. Yeah.
Throbbing Gristle.
I like Throbbing Gristle.
Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of stuff.
Right in my wheelhouse there.
Big mix of different stuff. Some reggae and...
Well, we see you now in a different light.
So that's pretty funny that it was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So. And then I've been on since about, I don't know, 2009. I did the news for 10 years, and I've been doing world music shows for quite a long time, since about 2010, 11.
Yeah, I remember for a while you were doing something where you would have, maybe it was the Iraq War or something, you would have a banner over an overpass, and it's something like honk
for peace.
Honk for peace.
Yes.
And then you would send us the audio of the cars honking.
That's right.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
That was so much fun.
I think she sweetened it with some geese, though. I have a feeling that it was a little, it's like the old laugh tracks. You could tell there was a little sweetener there.
And I think those were cassettes, I was
probably.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We used to record this this program on a cassette.
Well, we did the clay tablets first.
Yeah, cuneiform, hard to get that really fast. But I still have a whole slew of them. But of course, they deteriorate over time. You can't. They sound very weirdly saggy and strange.
Yeah,
you know, when you play
the way we look now. So it's, like, it's kind of a Dorian Gray thing.
Excellent. So what are you up to these days? What is your deal? I don't know what your deal is when you're not here.
What's your deal?
Yeah, what's your deal? Tell us what your deal is.
I am a speech and language therapist at East High School.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. And I've been working. This is my 20th year at East High School.
Do you teach them all English accents?
Absolutely. Yes.
We need more of that.
Yes. That's my entire mission in life.
It's so horrible the way Americans respond to British accents. I used to have a friend from the United Kingdom, and he would go into a bank and just, like, start talking, and they would, like, give him money. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really have a very posh accent. It was just, like, it's a British accent. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have that experience?
Oh, gosh. It's really true. When I moved to the U.S., I moved to the U.S. in 1979 at age 13. And everybody immediately thought that I was wealthy, that I owned horses, that I lived in a huge manor in the country, and that I was very intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
And so they missed all of those.
It was, of course, not true, but it was very interesting. I realized after a while that, well, this is what you call white privilege.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a positive prejudice. Mm-hmm. People were positively biased in my favor. Yeah. And it actually made me, because everyone thought I was so intelligent, I was like, oh, well, maybe they're right about that, you know? I went from being a very average student in England to being a little bit, you know, well, I mean, I had a more extensive education in England, but I think it really had a very positive influence on me, and it gave me a lot of self-confidence, and it just made me think, well, what if I came and I had brown skin and I had a Mexican accent, and then everybody's looking at me, oh, you're not very intelligent, we're assuming you come from a very impoverished place and that you don't know how to read and stuff, and what an impact that would have.
I think the thing is with a British accent, we're so used to the people ordering you about with the British accent, so it's like, you immediately want to go fetch somebody some tea or something. But, you know, if you notice in the Star Wars series, all the bad guys, the people that are running the Empire, they all have English accents.
Oh, yes.
It's a very interesting tell.
Mm. That's actually almost a universal trope. That goes back to the Spartacus.
The Romans had British accents.
The Romans had British accents, the slaves had American accents.
Excellent.
But that's kind of a traditional thing. You make the bad guys with British accents.
Yeah, well, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I had a friend from Saudi Arabia. He used to say when he wanted to insult me, "You're so English," he'd say.
Oh.
I had no idea what he meant at first. I said, "What does that mean to you people when you say it's so, you're so English?" Where is it? You know, double dealing, not telling you the truth all the time.
Yes.
Trying to carve up your country. Yes. You know, that kind of thing.
Colonial. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, great, thanks.
I thought maybe he was talking about you being having repressed emotions.
Oh, no. Just, you know, just not trustworthy.
Right. Exactly. Well, I have come bearing small gifts.
Oh, what is this?
To say thank you very much on behalf of myself and no doubt many listeners out there.
A little card.
I mean, you helped me get through Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Trump administration.
Wait for Gulf War III.
Trump administration I. Now we're getting ready for Trump administration II.
Thank you so much. This is a nice, sweet little card.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
I still have the Nixon picture you gave me a long time ago.
Right.
So that's in my office. So
yeah, I found that in a flea market.
It was a great picture of Nixon just kind of hanging out with a bunch of other white guys in brown suits and
just
they were laughing or something.
A very off the cuff photograph.
Yeah,
I don't know who took it.
It's a terrific picture.
Did you make this card?
I did.
Yeah. Oh, it's so nice.
It's just fabric sewn onto fabric with a sewing machine.
It's so like the bird is very perky.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
So did you have a good holiday?
I did, actually. Thank you for asking. My husband and I hosted the dinner at our house.
Oh, fun.
And after my mother died, I inherited the Georgian silver.
Mm.
So we had silver spoons and forks.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband bought some knives that would have sort of gone, wouldn't it? And so it was really fun to have the silver out. I've never done that before.
Mm. So who do you get to polish the silver?
Nobody.
The help.
The help, yeah.
You know, it turned out that the silver was fine. It was ready to go. It didn't need to be polished. And I didn't want to polish it either because then we'd be sort of eating polish. And
oh, yeah.
What really needed polishing was the brass candlesticks, and they needed it.
Blood stains on them?
Not this time.
Right.
So I've noticed
that was years ago. To bring that up.
Water under the bridge. Water under the bridge.
I was acquitted on that. That was nowhere near.
It was a hung jury. Actually,
nowhere near the library with Colonel Mustard.
I think the statute of limitations has probably expired.
So I've noticed something like watching movies and TV shows that at some time in Pants, you probably know this already, but in England, do they say Happy Christmas instead of Merry Christmas, or is that just something I thought I noticed?
You know, I think they do say Happy Christmas, and we also say Happy New Year, so it's Happy Happy in
America. Happy, I noticed that too.
But not Merry Christmas.
I think it's Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
No, it is. But more people are saying Merry. I've noticed that just from...
From being in England? Or?
No, from the monitoring what's going on.
The drone you have over Buckingham Palace.
The Prince and Princess of Wales said Happy Christmas on their Christmas card.
Did they?
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so...
Well, there you go.
Well, very good. Well, we've been chatting with our pal Helena White here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We've been talking about having you on for a while.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
You're one of our favorite people.
Well, thank you so much. That's so nice of you to say. I really appreciate that. Well, you guys have a good rest of your show, and I'll see you guys another time.
Okay, all right. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
I think we need more honking. More honking needs to occur. What will be the next honking issue? Yes, okay. Very good. Honk for ceasefire in Gaza.
Oh, okay.
Helena
good.
Has been doing.
Send you some of that audio.
That would be great. Oh, I wish you would.
Yeah, but not on a cassette. So, okay, thanks
Helena. That was very nice.
Yeah, she's sweet. So, okay, we're going to take a brief musical break and then we'll be back with all kinds of good stuff.
You got to have a mother for me. Yeah. Look here. There was a time when I was all alone. I had a secret, thought I was gone. Somebody dug me, said, "Now see what you were doing, brother. Stay ahead of me." But when I get burnt, I use a sap. And when I want my loving, my mother, she got to have.
And we're back. Don James.
So Helena's little message says, "Thanks for your biting wit. My weekly dose of Melon Floyd lets me know I'm not alone in my thoughts about this world."
Oh.
So.
Very nice.
Yeah. Weekly dose. Don't overdose. Make sure you get just the right amount. Doctor prescribed Melon Floyd.
And don't laugh for more than 4 hours. Maryland man charged after pouring whiskey into holy water during Christmas Eve service. Well, Jesus turned water into wine.
Yeah, so not into whiskey, though.
But yeah. They didn't have whiskey back then.
No, they did not.
They didn't invent distilling until...
That's one of those things where we went a little too far. Just like whiskey, nuclear weapons, you know, we always have to just get that extra mile.
This wine's pretty good, but what if it was... twice as strong.
Yeah, what if you get it literally poison somebody with alcohol before they're able to vomit it out? If we could do that, then life would be good. By the way, let's invent AI, too.
Let's see. I don't know. There's not much more to the story. He poured whiskey. Guy was 34.
Dangerous age.
Disrupted mass at two different churches in the county. So he was...
Where was this again? Maryland?
Maryland.
Where in Maryland is that?
St. Mary's County. Oh, listen to this guy's name. Thomas Campbell Bowling Van Getz. The third.
He sounds like a whiskey pourer. I got a story out of Maryland, too. I don't know if you heard this week. The governor of Maryland, Westmore, he finally got his Bronze Star. He apparently had received the Bronze Star 2 decades ago when he was in the Army Reserve in Afghanistan. But as these things often do, the processing for this was crazy, and he didn't receive it, which led a lot of people in the right-wing liosphere to basically claim that, you know, he was making all this up. But he finally did receive his award. The Bronze Star is given for meritorious service. And the Defense Department had issued more than 160,000 for people in Iran and Afghanistan. But basically, he had the application, and he was assured that he was going to get the star, and then he didn't. And so there was just a, basically an honest mistake rather in the mix-up that they had in the Defense Department. So he now actually has his bronze star. And to all of you who were casting aspersions, shut the hell up. Yeah. tired of that. We're just tired of it.
What about Tim Walz and getting out of the National Guard after only 24 years?
It was all part of his master plot.
I'll stay here 24 years.
And then I run for office. Yeah.
That showed how much the you know, I kind of hate to blame the media, but in cases like that, I don't know what else to say. I mean, that was a nothing story, absolutely nothing story.
Right.
And there were still headlines after headlines after headlines about the controversy, and there was no controversy.
Yeah, the controversy was somebody who was making a controversy.
Yeah, yeah.
This makes me think, I was saying before the show, how much of what the incoming president says do you think actually means anything, and how much of it's just rank BS?
I think the BS is 80-90% of it. I think some of it's just sort of random spin the wheel and see what pops into his brain. It's like, you know, talking about sharks and Hannibal Lecter, and then all of a sudden he remembers something about the Panama Canal from 50 years ago. Goes, that was a big issue, wasn't it?
yeah, there's a famous story about that George McGovern ran for Senate again in 1980, and he knew he was going to lose, which he did that year, because he was at a supermarket there in South Dakota campaigning, and these two women said, "I can't vote for you, Senator, because you voted to give away the Panama Canal." That was the big right-wing trope that year.
Sure.
And he noticed that they were paying for their groceries with food stamps, which, of course, was a program that he had helped to pioneer that the Democrats had put into place. So, you know, we're always trying to make things better for people who then, to their credit, say, you know, and now I should be able to make choices of my own, no matter how self-defeating and crazy they are. Okay, that's what we're here for, to empower you.
Well, you see stories every day now about, you know, a voting bloc or people who voted for Trump, and then now they're expressing concern about the things that Trump said he was going to do. I mean, he actually said, you know, he said a few things like the tariffs and the deportations. Those are really the only two things he said that were reality based. Yeah. But people, I saw something where a bunch of some people who had voted for him, and now they're begging him not to cut their Social Security, an older skewing group of people. And it's like, no, we need our Social Security. Well, then why did you vote for the guy who will drain it?
But see, this is both his...
And buy a giant gold toilet.
This is his strength in a way, though, is that people know he's a liar and that everything that comes out of his mouth is some confabulation or actual outright lie. Confabulation, I think sometimes he doesn't know what he's saying.
No.
Confabulation or outright lie. And so they bank on that. They say, oh, they're talking about Social Security. Oh, well, he's not going to do that because, you know, that's the thing he's just not going to do. Why? Because he just blows a lot of smoke. He's owning the libs. He's trolling people. You can't tell because so much of it is in that mode.
Yeah.
So. And then the people that vote for him can give themselves, they feel like they're in on the joke, you know.
Right.
We're not going to get upset about this because we know he's not going to hurt us.
Yeah.
You know. So then they can go ahead with a clean conscience and assume he's not going to do those things.
Well, it's a cafeteria. Then you go through and say, I'll take this one, but I'll take the racism but I don't want the Social Security.
They always
cuts.
Take the racism. Yeah. I don't know why. One of the most popular dishes in the cafeteria for a long time here at the United States cafeteria. I don't know why. Now with extra racism.
I was talking to some of my neighbors the other day, and we were trying to figure out if Americans are more racist or more sexist.
Yeah.
And it's probably more sexist, actually. Yeah. I mean, because we've had two bites at the apple now with pretty qualified women running against Trump.
Yeah.
And And I think America showed its has shown its true colors there.
My poor Aunt Hilda, you know, she's 80 now, and she, you know, she was a young woman back in the late 60s and 70s, and was always involved in women's issues and environmental movement and so on. And she just, as soon as she sees a woman nominated, she just figures she's going to lose.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it just accepts that. That's just the way it's going to be. And she started to get a little excited about Kamala at a certain point, but her general, you know, reaction was like, this is not going to work out. Yeah. I just know how she's experienced the depth of the, you know, the degradation basically that people have experienced mm-hmm. over the yeah. years.
Well, I was reading. I like most people, I kind of disengaged after the election for a while. I'm starting to get sucked back in a little bit.
Sure.
But I was reading this article this morning and I didn't bring it with me, so I don't have the exact numbers. But white women voted pretty overwhelmingly for Trump in this last election.
Well, that's an interesting question then. It sounds to me like the racism thing is
perhaps
more operative.
Yeah.
Because it's all those crazy immigrants that are making them upset or worried or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was thinking about the racism in the cafeteria, and there was always something in the cafeteria that they would use again. You know, like it would start out as like the main course,
and then
it would end up in the stew, and eventually it was in the Jell-O.
Yeah,
it seems like we keep coming up with new ways of packaging it, but it still seems to be in there.
Right,
little chunks of raisins.
Right,
you know, raisins, which is the racism that is in the Jell-O salad.
Well, that was the attack on DEI and things like that. These last couple of years, it wasn't. You know, it was sort of racism light. I mean, it was still racism.
What's interesting about it was that it's a great tactic. They found the most extreme and sometimes kind of crazy. I mean, I work at an institution of higher learning. I know how these things can go. Some of the crazier things people have said because, you know, there's always people that are out there. And then they start with that and say, oh, isn't that the woke thing? They say, oh, isn't that terrible? Oh, look at that. Yeah. Like, okay, that's arguable. But at least it's not totally out there, but then they just use that as the Trojan horse to just basically say, I mean, to provide cover for what is actually racism.
And then they throw out the term slippery slope, and you know, then we're all pooping in cat boxes or something.
The idea that Kamala was that was the most offensive thing, I think, the idea that she was a minority hire. I remember that was a phrase that was going around among some of the right wingers.
Well, there was a trope on the right wing that, or even people who, you know, were kind of didn't want to vote for her, saying that she needed more experience.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like how much more?
She was the attorney general of the largest state in the union,
which would be about the eighth biggest country in the world if it was in the.
I mean, we had a president who was a governor of Georgia and a governor of Arkansas.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the Attorney General of California probably has more experience than that. So,
well, I mean, this has changed in Texas, but by the time W. Bush was elected, the Texas governorship was a very weak position. It was almost an advisory position.
Right. So, they throw out baseballs or something. I don't remember what it was.
Well, he owned a baseball team.
Yeah, so, well, there was that.
So there was that qualification. So. Yeah. Here's a fun fact.
Yep.
Since 1978... CEO pay has risen over 1,000%.
Oh, I know.
1,085%. And workers' pay has risen 24%.
Yep. So I teach a class in business ethics, and this was the second unit that we have, is I have them read about executive compensation and what would be the justification for it. And what's fascinating about it is this idea that, well, I've had students say something along the lines of, well, if they're going to pay me it, I'll take it. It's like, no, wait. So you're telling me that if I told you I'm going to pay you $5,000 to mow my lawn, you'd take my money? Well, yeah, if you're stupid enough to give it to me. And I'm like, okay, isn't that greed? Like, isn't that a moral wrong? Aren't you, like, taking advantage of my stupidity?
Wonder if something was wrong.
Yeah,
would
you wonder
person?
If something was wrong? No, of course I'm worth it. Yeah. That's the underlying thing that's problematic, is these people think they're worth it.
Yeah.
That's the Chicago
School of Economics. Yeah. If somebody's going to pay me $5,000 to mow their lawn, then I am worth that.
Yeah,
much,
right.
Okay. Yep. I love how Musk has, like, what is he, like, CEO of three or four big companies, and now he's doing this volunteer work to, you know, screwing up the government. It's like, what are these, like, part-time jobs where he's getting billions of dollars a year?
And what's interesting is the primary justification for high salaries is that capitalism has changed dramatically in the last 50 years. I mean, it's a much chancier thing, and you need people who are in charge who are entrepreneurs, not just, you know, caretakers. Because it used to be in the old days, you really, an American company in like the 1960s, you'd have to really screw up to not make money, okay? You know, so you don't have to pay them very much because they're not doing anything terribly creative.
Yeah.
But the other thing about it is that the twin reasons for high executive compensation, this is really fascinating. One is the idea that they need to be risk-taking entrepreneurs, so you need to pay the money for that. But the other one is you're not sure they're going to stay with you. There's an awareness that basically there's what's called the agent-patient problem, is that basically you don't know whether this person is going to actually be loyal to your company or not, mm-hmm. whether they'll do something else. It's like, if you're having to pay people, it's like paying your kid to do their homework or yeah. something. Like, if you have to pay the guy just to keep them loyal to your company, you need to get another person.
Yeah. So, well, and if you need to pay them, what was Musk? He had that Tesla, like, wasn't going to pay him some bonus, and it was like $60 billion or something, ridiculous. I mean, what possibly could he? What value added would there be where he could add? And that was just a bonus. That wasn't his salary or normal compensation. I mean, what the hell could he do to be worth $60 billion? And so, we've seen what he did to Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, he bought that at $44 billion, and it's worth, I don't know, around 10 now. Yeah. So, I mean, he's lost essentially $35 billion, right. and he's still going to reward himself.
So when people talk about this, economists talk about this, they talk about market irrationalities. And executive compensation is one of the major market irrationalities, which means it's not efficient. There's lots of other things you could be doing with that money other than just giving it to that guy. So you don't have to be some kind of socialist or even critic of capitalism who's a little, you know, less intense than that. You just have to look at it from a capitalist point of view. It's like, this is money that is being wasted, opportunity costs, by just paying this guy outrageous amounts of money. That's why we're in a period now of crony capitalism. Mm-hmm. It's the kleptocracy as opposed to even a capitalist model.
Right.
And, of course, Trump's going to play that to the hilt. I mean, that's what the tariffs are for. The tariffs are to get people to basically be afraid of having a tariff slapped on their company.
Yeah.
And he'll use that as like any good mafia don will get loyalty.
Well, it's exactly like, I mean, there's been this parade of people coming to Mar-a-Lago now to cozy up to the Godfather.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tim Apple from Apple came. And he said,
and like any good parade, there are a lot of clowns there.
No, Tim Cook from Apple came and said, you know, please don't put these tariffs on us, because then this Samsung company will get, and that's not an American company.
Yeah.
And so Trump said, we won't put tariffs on Apple products because you were nice to me and told me all kinds of nice things.
All to get people to be nice.
But I like the CEOs that totally screw up the company, run it into the ground,
right.
and then they still get this enormous compensation. And sometimes even like the old golden parachute.
Right.
Well, you destroyed our company, but here's $100 million if you go away.
I wish they were really golden, because that thing would hit the ground like you would not believe. That would be great. Well, and it seeped into other aspects of life, right? Cultural figures, academic figures. I mean, presidents of universities make ridiculous amounts of money now, and it becomes a self-perpetuating, like, lie. You're not going to be able to get quality people unless you pay them like their little CEO wannabes. And so you have these outrageous amounts of money they're paying just for that. And again, the idea is you're supposed to be paying them based on performance. That's a rationality of a market system, but they're not. They're paying it because there's a kind of a trope out there that they all need to get paid that much.
Yeah.
So. And it's an expectation that's psychological, not anything about actual performance.
Sure. It's like signing free agent baseball players or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see in sports, there'll be a free agent and they'll sign a big contract, and then there'll be like a comparable free agent. I mean, sometimes even like kind of a rival.
Yeah.
And that guy wants a contract that's like $1 more than the other guy's.
Yep.
And
well, that's why.
So they're just keeping score.
That's why they're all competing with each other. It's all about vanity and pride and masters of the universe. If you taxed all these people at the same rate, if you took away an equal, they would still be in competition. They just have less money, and that money could be doing something else. It could be much more efficiently used in our economy than it is right now.
Yeah.
And so it's like if competition is all you're worried about and being better than Jeff Bezos or something, you can play with $1 billion rather than multiples of that, and you could still come out ahead.
But someone has to be the first trillionaire. That's the real.
That was Scrooge McDuck.
That's
we
the
all
real
know
competition.
That.
Speaking of Bezos, there was a rumor
going
around
Scrooge McDuck, yes.
That that he's getting married again. I mean, that's true. That's not the rumor.
Okay.
The rumor was that the wedding was going to be an extravaganza.
Yeah.
That would cost $600 million.
Sure.
And he's denied it though. He said that's not a penny over $599.
Yeah, $599. Exactly.
We're not going to pay the mime. There's a fire near Shelbyville in the gun storage facility in Shelbyville, Michigan.
Mm.
So that can't be good. Someone from Springfield must have said it.
All of our delightful cousins are there. Hey, it's an annual ritual.
What's that?
Wall Street investment houses are predicting another robust, wonderfully good year.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, they're all focusing their analytic firepower.
So these people who want others to give them their money to invest, they're saying it's going to be a good time to give them money to invest?
Yeah.
Okay.
So somebody, some naysayer, some troublemaker decided to do a little analysis and looked at all the market predictions and the actual market results going back to December 31st, 2000. This person, his name was Paul Hickey, is a founder of Bespoke Investment Group, and he found that the Wall Street consensus predicted only gains, big surprise, every single year of about 8.8% on average. And as you guessed, there were some big losses during that period of time. So the variance between the actual amount of performance and the prediction was huge. There's an average gap between the prediction and the actual performance of about 14.2 percentage points.
That's huge. You could do better than that flipping a coin.
The track, man. Come on. they all go run out and they're all going to go, oh, it's going to be a great year for the market. And they say that every single year, this guy looked at the last 25 years, and he found that they say this, and the gap between, not only was there a gap, but the gap is pretty substantial.
Yeah, the dirty little secret they don't want people to understand is that it's, a lot of it is random. I mean, they'll say, we do this, all this technical analysis, and it's like, it doesn't amount to anything. Yeah. I mean, the trend is upward year by year. I mean, if you look, not a total stair step, but I mean, over time, it does go up.
Well, yeah, because they're commodifying your dreams.
Yeah.
So that all they throw that into the gross domestic product, and
but
it looks great.
You might get an extra $20 out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But in general, I mean, these people look at these numbers and run them through these super smart people, and they are super smart.
Oh, yeah,
and they run them through these incredible programs, but there's just so many variables, and humans are just so weird.
The thing is, they're super smart, but they're like hogs through the chute. I mean, they're not able to get outside of that little barrier that they have on either side about what it is they're doing and why and so on.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's why things like index funds are do just as well. And
sure.
The other little fun fact I like about money managers is that women managers do much better than men.
Yeah.
And but even though I'm sure 90% of the money managers are men. But,
yeah. 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 Well, because of course the men are like, I know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, Bitcoin. Yeah.
Bitcoin. Oh my God.
I keep seeing stuff from politicians talking about Bitcoin minted in America, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, the strategic Bitcoin reserve. it's like in the strategic unicorn reserve.
Yeah,
what are you talking? First of all,
you believe in fairies?
Minted in America? I think they really, and I think Trump thinks this, I think he thinks there is such a physical thing
probably
as a Bitcoin that, and you got to make those in America.
Mm. So. Well, He's in the market for NFTs. So,
yeah.
You know.
So, I saw a story about all the stuff, the Christmas stuff they were selling on Trump's website. It was just It was like a catalog of like the Sharper Image, only you know, the Temu version of Sharper Image, and it was like, you know, all these ornaments and
they have any
Bibles.
They have Trump toilet paper. I'll buy some of that.
Melania sent out a nice little, you know, holiday announcement, yeah. You know, wishing, you know, happy holidays to everybody and peace on earth, and had a picture of like a little ornament, little star ornament, and
sure.
Somebody noted that's the ornament she's selling for $90.
And those things are hideous. I said, where did I? Oh, I was watching one of the commentators, and they were showing it. So she was on Fox, Fox and Friends, and she was, here's my lovely ornament. And it's like, oh my God, that thing is awful. What are you talking about? It's almost like they're trying to see if they can get you to buy the crappiest, ugliest thing. That'll really show your devotion. You know,
Baron made this.
It's like those followers of Voldemort who all want to die on their sword or something.
You have a very lovely nose there. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WTFM.org. You could be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page, and you can listen anytime you want. And thanks to our pal, Mindless Minion DQ.
Oh, you bet.
He does the file management to make these things pod acceptable. Yeah. So through Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. So thanks to DQ. And thanks for the Frosty the Snowman music he provided.
Yeah, that was
us
great.
Last year. That was great. So I should look up the guy who did that. That was we got a follow up on that. And we'll do that after the break here. So we're gonna play some announcements and then come back with.
What did the founding fathers think of pornography? Turns out a couple of them had views.
and Pornhub accounts.
On my bad breath. Hey! You know my face is getting short and I got the blues. I got a fucking job and I paid my dues on the good foot. Hey! On the good foot. I got to get on the good foot. Hey! On the good foot. Get on the good foot.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Hello again, friends. Stu Levitan here, inviting you to a special New Year's Eve history lesson on Madison's greatest decade, the 1970s, when the highest hopes and worst fears of the 1960s came true. I'll tell you how the city burned in the spring semester of 1970, catalog the extraordinary women of the decade, document the revolutionary first administration of Paul Soglin, and take a walk on the city's seamy side. That's Madison in the 70s, a special report, Tuesday, December 31st from 6 to 7 p.m. on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Listener-sponsored community radio since 1975.
And we're back. And Mindless Meaning D Cube did send us this this email from the person who composed the minor key version of Frosty the Snowman, Requiem for a Snowman, we used last week. His name is Rick Hirsch. And he wrote back and said, I must tell you a couple things. Wart was absolutely my favorite radio station and sets the bar for what a great radio station should be.
Wow.
He says he liked the Mel and Floyd show and listened to many of them. I still tell friends here about Mel and Floyd. And he was just very happy that we used his
excellent
his piece. So thanks to Rick and thanks to Floyd for the nice little holiday special there. So
one of the most ludicrous elements of contemporary political life, now that we have all these Republican-appointed justices on the Supreme Court, is that everything now, in terms of legal decision-making, is inspired by originalism, right?
Sure,
the idea that you have to figure out what they were thinking back in 1791 before you're able to make a decision on a particular point of law having to do with constitutionality. Well, a couple of issues have come up with the court around the area of pornography. And the question, of course, is whether pornography is protected by the First Amendment, which allows freedom of speech. Now, they've allowed companies to have free speech, things that are not actual persons. They've called advertising free speech. But, you know, there's no telling what they're going to do with this one, right? Because it doesn't fit in anybody's prior agenda. So the question
depends if Clarence needs a new motorhome.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So they're looking at what people thought about this back in the day. And it turns out, and you will not be surprised by this, because a lot of the other hot-button conservative issues that people naturally assume, because they don't read history, were people have the assumption that because the recent past was a certain way, then the farther past must have been that way too. But that's not true. For example, few people know that in New Jersey, blacks and women could vote until the mid-1800s. So you assume that would be crazy, right? But it's because things go back and forth, as we're about to see again in our political climate in this country, back and forth. It's not a straightforward progression. But at any rate, it turns out that during the 18th century, in what later became the United States, there were no laws against obscenity. Sexual expression and imagery were common, widespread, legal and explicit during this period of time. It's according to
ankles and everything.
It's according to Jeffrey Stone. He's a law professor at the University of Chicago. And he wrote a book and he wrote a law review article. The law review article was Sex and the First Amendment. And the book he wrote was called Sex and the Constitution. I think he just called it that because he wanted to have a few books flying off the shelf there.
Sure.
But no, it turns out that in the 18th century, bookstores in the colonies carried an extraordinary array of erotica. There were no statutes forbidding obscenity during the entire colonial period. And to the contrary, distribution, exhibition, and possession of pornographic materials was not thought to be any of the state's business.
Really?
Same thing, for example, with abortion. We didn't have any laws against abortion until the mid-19th century. So, of course, there are some people that are countering these some professors who are associated with a Christian university are saying that they you have to listen closely to see how they're lying. They wrote that that this is false, this is wildly inaccurate, and here's what they said. They said that there seems to be no domestically produced pornography until the 1840s.
Domestically produced?
Very good. You caught it. I'm so proud of you. Yeah. I mean, we didn't have domestically produced clothes until the 1840. I mean, why would you think they would? I mean, everything you got from Europe, you know? I mean, putting
needles.
That in there. Yeah, I mean, it's just like the classic right-wing BS, you know? It's like, that's not the point, is it? Does it make a difference where it was produced? Now, my question, other question for you, You got one. That was excellent. So my second question for you, of the founding fathers, of the gentleman frequently referred to as the founding fathers, who would you imagine had private collections of pornography?
Ben Franklin.
Very good. And who else?
I don't know. Jefferson, maybe?
Very good. Very good. You know your founding fathers, that's for sure. Yeah, so Jefferson and Franklin both had collections of erotica,
I'm
sure they picked up while they were ambassadors to France,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, that's where you get it from.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was not domestically produced.
It was not domestically produced, yeah. But it was not illegal either.
Wow.
No one stopped them when they came to the United States and said, let me look at what your books are or anything like that. They just didn't do that, you know. So.
Jeez. Got another fire story here. There was a fire at what's known to a lot of people as the Morrison Hotel. It was the famous hotel that the Doors posed in front of for their Morrison Hotel album cover.
Oh wow, cool!
They were walking by. Apparently, they were walking by and they just saw it kind of by accident. And they said, this would make a great album cover. And they ran inside real quick, and somebody snapped a picture of them, and then they got chased out of there. But, the Morrison Hotel is burned to the ground, apparently.
Oh, wow.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar.
Real obvious, I know.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
That's fine. I love it.
I was either going to play this or the end.
All right. So the FDA has decided they're going to tighten the rules. This was announced last Thursday. They tighten the rules on using the term healthy.
Okay.
And labeling food, which, as you can imagine, drove people nuts in the food industry. So they're basically gonna update what counts as healthy. It's a term that was first set legally what that would entail 30 years ago, but they've decided that they need to empower consumers is what they said, because diet-related diseases, you know, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, leading cause of disability and death in the United States. And just to put the fine point on it, contribute to America's unfortunate status of having the lowest life expectancies among large high-income countries. So they've got a 318-page rule book that sets forth what counts as healthy. Of course, now they're just going to put healthy, H-E-L-T-H-Y, on everything. You know? Let you figure it out.
There's a school in Arizona, and it's a charter school, and the state board, the charter school board, approved an application last week from a place called Unbound Academy to open a school with a two-hour-per-day academic curriculum set by an AI bot.
Yeah.
So the school will be taught by AI, no teachers for those 2 hours.
I had a story about AI talking about how they think they may have reached the limit of what they can do by feeding it data. They said they're running out of data to feed to the large language model AI. And I was reading through the article, and it really hit me that, you know, I mean, they hallucinate now, and all they're dealing with is factual data, mathematics, things like that. And I was reading this one guy that's involved in this OpenAI work. He said they have a real problem with moral and philosophical problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like, so anything that requires any kind of judgment call or balancing of different options or whatever, it's totally useless for that. But, of course, we've just decided we don't need that anymore anyway.
Well, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I do a little bit of gig work for, you know, training some of those things. And the one that it got stuck on it. It kept asking me if I had. I was talking about tariffs.
Oh yes,
tariffs,
I remember that.
Or something. And
yeah.
And I expressed an opinion that I thought it was bad for, you know, this reason and that reason. And then it said, "Well, do you have any personal experience with this, or does this affect you personally?" And they kept coming back to that. And I realized after all, it didn't have that idea that I could feel strongly about something even though it wasn't going to affect me directly. I mean, to some extent it would, but not that big a deal.
But that's not the determinative component to it. You want to have a society that works in a certain way.
Yeah.
It may not hurt you tremendously, but it's going to hurt a lot of people to some extent and some to others' extent.
Yeah, and it's you know, pretty much a bad thing. But I could see that in an abstract way, but I couldn't say, well, if they do that, then, you know, my eggs are going to go up by 50 cents or something. Yeah. And that's why I hate this. So it was like, it didn't understand the concept of, you know, empathy or abstract thinking. And it was very, Melvina was going on a trip a couple weeks ago now. And it was a long car drive. So she was wanting to take some snacks with her.
Yeah.
And she's of that generation where she needs to, punches it in her phone and says, what snack should I take on a car trip? And I know.
How do I know what my desires are? Ask that thing.
Well, she would just, you know, she knows what she likes, but maybe get an idea of something different you wouldn't think of. But it had a list of things, and one of the things it listed was alcoholic beverages.
I also just saw a story that said, why are there no good AI chefs? And I thought... there's a great scene in the original Futurama where Bender is a chef. Bender is the robot that they have, as you recall. And he says, you guys like swarms of things, right? And I was like, yeah, I don't think we're going to have good AI chefs. A little too much creativity.
Oh, that's funny. Oh.
Hey, I saw that the Freedom From Religion Foundation, our friends from the Freedom of Religion Foundation, took out a full-page ad for Christmas Eve, and it says, at this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. And the FFRF says they're working for a world in which people are more important than dogma. Religions that teach hate, sexism, racism, trans, and homophobia are not to be pandered to. War, violence, terror, and discrimination in the name of imaginary gods are no longer countenanced. And religion stays in its place. You, stay.
I don't have to.
It's a matter of conscience, but out of our laws and social policy. You know, that was an innovation that people came up with back in the 1600s. It just shows you how far back, again, we want to regress. They had the 30 Years' War in Europe, and they thought, you know, Catholics beating the tar out of Protestants and vice versa for 30 years. And they thought, you know what? Let's have countries that don't have an official religion. It's just... learned our lesson here. Not so much.
One more thing to fight about.
Yeah.
So I get these things pushed at me when I look at the news with the little fact-checking things. Yeah. It's a little, I don't know, column or something. And they're always the most ridiculous things. It's like they had to fact-check this. But this was one from this week. No, the Pope is not opening 5 portals to other worlds on Christmas Eve. Fact check.
Yeah, good to know.
How many portals is he opening then? That's what I'd like to know. So somebody actually, you know, that was actually a rumor going around, I guess. But
Well, it would be nice if they actually reported what he said. One of the things he did say during his Christmas message is that he wanted ceasefires to be put in place, and he wants the debts of poor countries to be forgiven by those of the rich nations, the debts that have been given out by the rich nations. And
but then the rich nations won't have any incentive to help them anymore. It's like the student loans.
The Pope also drew attention to the humanitarian situation in Gaza, where children are freezing to death right now. He's... basically trying to be a good guy. Holy doors will be opened in Rome's main basilicas, not to other dimensions. And also in the prison, which the Pope was visited yesterday, actually. Jesus awaits all people, Francis said. He awaits prisoners who, everything notwithstanding, are still children of God.
No, very good.
He's a nice man.
Yeah, he is. He's the nicest pope that I can remember. Some of them were not so nice.
You mean the Nazi ones?
Yeah, the Nazi pope.
The Nazi pope. Those are always a bad mark.
Yeah. U.S. Appeals Court halts enforcement of anti-money laundering law.
Really?
A U.S. Appeals Court has halted enforcement of an anti-money laundering law. Laundering law that requires corporate entities to disclose the identities of their real beneficial owners to the U.S. Treasury Department. This was it's in the New Orleans-based 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. They did this Thursday. They reinstated a nationwide injunction that had been issued earlier this month by a federal judge in Texas who had concluded the Corporate Transparency Act was unconstitutional.
But I like to keep my money clean.
Oh, the The Center for Individual Rights said that given that we have established that this is likely unconstitutional, this intrusive form of government surveillance should be halted until the law's fate is finally resolved.
Yep.
So that's, and then they're for the Center for Individual Rights, so they know what they talk
they
of.
Must be. So.
Whooping cough. CDC data reveals that everybody's got whooping cough, apparently. So, and that's just the beginning of where we're going.
You get
going.
That from whooping cranes.
Is that it?
The,
do you have to get whooping cushion?
So, have you heard about Tupi?
No.
Tupi is a baby capybara, which is, of course, as
you know,
the largest rodent in the world. They spend a lot of their time just eating grass and water plants and so on.
They're sweet.
But Tupi was born on December 3rd at San Antonio Zoo, and he's the first of his species to be born at the facility in 25 years. So so Mugai, or whatever its name is just going to have to get out of the way because it's all Tupi now.
The baby hippo? Or?
The baby hippo is going to, it's all hippo now.
Yeah, we can only focus on one cute animal at a time. So.
Please be, so there was a little, you mentioned Bitcoin. It turns out there's a meme coin called $Tupi, T-U-P-I. And the San Antonio Zoo had to put out a message here.
Oh,
please be aware that the San Antonio Zoo is not associated with or benefiting from the cryptocurrency named after Tupi.
Oh, my God.
The new baby capybara born at San Antonio Zoo. Also, we're not opening the doors to any other dimensions.
We used to have a couple of those in Madison. I haven't been to the zoo here for a long time.
They are quite adorable.
They really are.
Yeah,
they're sweet.
I mean, they're gigantic guinea pigs, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So. And they are rodents, so it's not as if having baby ones is that odd, but it was the first one they had at San Antonio.
27 of them.
Yeah.
820 of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of animals, I always like to tell stories about Clopsy and how he likes to fight animals on TV. He doesn't like horses. That's a big one, and obviously other dogs. But those are the big ones. So I had the TV on the other day, and the trailer for the new Superman movie came out, which is like people are going crazy for that already, and it doesn't come out till what. July or something. look, a trailer.
Gabbo.
But what's different about this one is they have the super dog in it.
Oh, yeah.
Crypto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
they should make crypto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It probably will, or already do. But he was just this adorable little white dog, and he had the little cute little red Superman cape on, and Clopsy just hated it.
So was he barking at the screen?
Oh, my God. I thought he was going to throw himself through the TV. He really did not like the super dog. Clopsy, that dog can fly. I think he can take you. You got one eye. He's got X-ray vision and heat vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Does the dog have all those things too? The super dog in the comics.
Oh yeah.
He's got like X-ray vision.
Yeah,
and
he has
the super
whole smear.
Super breath.
It's always unclear in the stories.
Dog super breath would be really bad.
Well, I got to tell you that it's always unclear in the stories how intelligent he is too. There's this kind of assumption that he had thought balloons in the original comics where he was thinking things in like people language, presumably. So it's like, what's going on with that? He was like sort of Snoopy before Snoopy, you know? Like, what's that thing's deal?
Yeah. Better than the super horse who would like sometimes turn into a guy.
There was a super horse, a super cat.
Monkey.
A super monkey. Mm-hmm. Yep. Super monkey.
But didn't like Supergirl have a thing with the horse or something?
Yeah, it was a centaur.
It was a really
It was originally a centaur.
Oh, really? I didn't.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The Silver Age comics were very disturbing.
Well, you know, it's the whole girl horse thing, you know, which is back in the day.
Sure. So
that was the thing. That was what people did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. They set the dog up. And they set the monkey first. And I read a book recently about the Soviet space dogs. And of course, and they were saying that originally they were going to send up monkeys, but monkeys really are not very obedient. They're just they're all over the place, sure. and they get really, really nervous, and they worry about things. And dogs, you can train a dog
they're like humans.
Press the button and do what it's supposed to do. Yeah. But yeah, it's like setting up a human if you're setting up a monkey. So I think that Jor-El sent up the monkey first and thought, that's not working. Dog. That'll do it.
Dog, cat, rat,
spider,
horse. all right, time to declare the weekend. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. Happy birthday to our pal, Ruby.
Yes.
In a few days. So yep. I don't want to give her exact birth date on the air.
How many eons will she be?
I don't know. She's still pretty young and spry.
She is, compared to us. Yeah, young and spry. Yeah,
dust is spry compared to us. Anyway, stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday On My Mind. All kinds of great things here on your favorite radio station, WRT. You are listening to WRT, 89.9 FM, Madison. Pants, it was great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Have a great week, everybody. And stick around. And again, the Jaguar is prowling around here somewhere. He'll be here shortly. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. All night long. The girl on there with the hot pants on.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, December 27th.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1907. At 3:45 that afternoon, the Chilean military opened machine gun fire on a school occupied by striking workers. It's estimated that between 1 and 3,000 people died that day in what came to be known as the Santa Maria School Massacre. The early 20th century was a time of great wealth disparity in Chile. Dock workers in the northern city of Iquique went on strike. These workers mostly loaded saltpeter into ships for transport. Saltpeter is a key ingredient in gunpowder. Soon, workers from the nearby saltpeter flats joined the strike. The saltpeter in Chile was controlled mostly by foreign corporations, predominantly British. It was one of the most lucrative Chilean exports. As part of the work action, the strikers occupied the Santa Maria School in Iquique. Chilean President Pedro Montt ordered the strikers be driven out of the city. 400 armed soldiers encircled the workers. They rained machine gun fire on the strikers. Among the dead were women and children, family members.